have you both online here. Let's talk about mental health challenges in rural areas during the holidays. What, Jeff, I'll start with you. Tell me about what kind of mental health challenges do we see in rural areas at this time of year?
Well, there are many challenges in rural areas as it relates to mental illness, and unfortunately, it's not just this time of year. So I'm going to take a step back, if I may, and just talk about the prevalence in the situation that we're facing in rural America. I'm talking to you from my family's dairy farm, actually. So this is my daily existence and something that's very real to me. Rural Minds was actually founded 3 years ago as a result of my 28-year-old nephew's suicide here near our family farm. He was suffering in silence because of the stigma that exists surrounding mental illness and substance use disorder. And despite the fact that he came from a very close-knit farming family like my family, he didn't feel comfortable talking about the fact that he was dealing with depression. And no one in the family knew this until, sadly, it was too late. So the stigma that exists around mental illness in rural areas is still something that we are tackling. Unlike cancer, unlike diabetes, unlike even COVID today, where people will talk about other illnesses, people in small-town America are still not comfortable talking about mental illness because many of us were raised to not talk about this. Many of us were told that it's a character flaw. It's not an illness. And in fact, it's very much a disease or an illness like any of the other ones I mentioned. The isolation in rural areas can be very real, especially this time of year. I am talking to you from the snow belt of upstate New York, where we're expecting a major blizzard this weekend. And once that happens, you're normally shut in even more than normal. We don't have the access to healthcare in rural areas like a lot of suburban and urban areas do. The last statistic I saw said that 65% of the counties in the United States that are considered rural have no psychiatrist. And so there are many other factors, but this time of year, I think the weather plays in greatly, but also the unrealistic expectations of what the holidays are supposed to be about and the financial burden. And the fact that, again, if you're living on a farm like I do, it's hard to get away for even family functions because farming is a very labor-intensive proposition where you can't just leave your job because the animals have to be fed. The animals have to be milked in the case of a dairy farm. So there are many challenges, and I know Nikki is going to talk about many of those as well.
Nikki, let's turn it over to you. You're at Pfizer, the Director of Occupational Health and Wellness. What do you see when it comes to mental health in rural areas?
Thank you. And yes, in addition to my role within Pfizer, I also practice as a nurse practitioner in a rural community. So I have two perspectives, both from the work at Pfizer that I do with the employees there, and then also in the community. And what we see is people that are struggling on a daily basis in their normal life to then have the additional pressures of holidays that can really be that tipping point. And that tipping point can be from things like so many additional social events that get added to the calendar. And I know that that can often sound like lots of fun. Oh, it's another Christmas party or a holiday party. But in reality, someone that is struggling with mental health or anxiety or just even a little bit of feeling down isn't necessarily going to want to be at these events, but puts extra stress upon themselves and extra expectation. And then it can also go with the financial strain. How do I make sure that I'm able to purchase the gifts that I'm expected to purchase or that I'm thought to be expected to purchase? And in rural America, as in many other areas, financially, it's been a struggle for a lot of folks. And if you look at farms or other, again, manual labor jobs, people struggle financially to be able to make ends meet. And then you add the expectations of the holidays. So it's really that the holidays just amplify what has been happening on a day-to-day basis, making it even more difficult to just continue to function.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Now, I live in an area that a lot of people would consider rural, but is actually growing. It's I live in a growing community of about 50,000, but we have apple orchards around us. We have wheat fields up to the north. We have cherry and pear orchards and vineyards. So this can be considered a rural area as well. Is it difficult to it's difficult to find mental health solutions here? Although I will say that immediately next door to me, they have been building a behavioral health clinic. So that's something that is that's a plus. But this is still an exception. So how difficult is it to find solutions to mental health? And Nikki, I'll start with you on that. How difficult is it?
So even something that Jeff had said early in his statistics about many of the counties around the country that are considered rural not having a mental health provider. The one thing is that mental health can still be helped and managed even through your primary care provider. So it might not be a psychiatrist, but there are ways to have mental health evaluated, assessed, and assisted through other health resources. But it's a matter of finding appointments and availability of a lot of different types of healthcare providers in the country. And it's recognizing that I need to see someone and accepting that I need to see someone. And one of the examples that I always give is we would not think twice about having our diabetes managed or our high blood pressure. And we often even talk about it in public. We could be out at the diner talking to our neighbor down the street and saying about the blood pressure medicine we need to take. But it's not that same dialogue when it comes to mental health and mental health medications or counseling, et cetera. So it's kind of a multifaceted way of getting that care, that it can be difficult to get to a provider or find one. Then when we do realize that we want to see and need to see a provider, finding the one that has an appointment available that's not several months out. So it's multifaceted of how we get that help, but there are also a lot more telephonic and virtual options that have now become available too. So we need to look at it holistically about how we can make sure we get the connections and resources to the people that need them.
Right. Jeff, what can you say to the availability of mental health, of help in mental problems?
Well, certainly Nikki covered a number of the challenges that those of us who live in rural America have when it comes to healthcare in general, but one thing that's very important to understand is that many people in rural America, because of the nature of their jobs, are either uninsured or underinsured. I recently was at a meeting where I was speaking where I met a gentleman who said he was diabetic but also living with depression. And he said, I have no insurance, so I'm paying for my medicine out of pocket. I can only afford one. I know the diabetes will kill me. And the depression may as well, but I had to make a choice. No one in this country should need to make a choice between diabetes or mental illness. But this is where a lot of people find themselves in rural areas. The other thing I mentioned was the stigma that's attached. So even in the facility that you just mentioned that's being built nearby, there are many people in small towns who do not want to be seen going in or out of a mental health provider because they're ashamed, they're embarrassed. And they know that if their pickup truck that they use on their farm is seen outside the local mental health facility, the word is going to travel fast in a small town. So the other thing I think Nikki touched upon is transportation. We don't have mass transportation in rural areas. We don't even have Ubers in, you know, most rural areas. Certainly we don't have any here where I live. There aren't any trains. There aren't any buses. So if a person has inadequate or no transportation, it's virtually impossible, unless they've got a neighbor or friend that will take them to the healthcare provider, for them to go and seek the help that they need.
How much of rural America is having these problems? Jeff, I know that there are some statistics you have.
Yeah, well, the latest statistics I've seen nationwide, and we're a national organization, we just happen to be based here at my farm in upstate New York, but is that 46 million people live in what's considered rural America. That's a big part of our population, 14% of our population. And as you mentioned, it's growing because once COVID hit and a lot of people were able to start working remotely, many people who were living in urban or suburban communities started moving out to more rural areas. And once that happened, it's a double-edged sword. The good news is that they know what good looks like. They know what they had in more populated areas. But the flip side of that is it's already putting pressure on an already fragile healthcare ecosystem that, you know, is, as Nikki said, already oversaturated, and it's very difficult to get those appointments. People in rural areas are 65% more likely to die by suicide than people in urban and suburban areas. And tragically, young people in rural areas are 54% more likely to die by suicide. I saw a statistic that I think you might be interested in, Ken, about the state of Washington, that it's estimated that 52% of people that live in Washington aged 12 to 17 who are living with depression did not receive any care in the last year. And knowing the statistics in the youth population, that's very troubling to us.
Yeah, I got you there. So here we are, and also you mentioned about funding for mental health issues and mental health treatment. We're now coming to a new administration which may not be as open to helping those programs that need it, and so that adds one more element. And I'm not trying to make this political or anything, but it's still important. So now that we're coming up on the holidays, what suggestions do you have, not only for the holidays, but any time of year, for somebody who can't reach or can't access the help they need?
So there are some things that folks can do for self-help that can decrease some of those stressors over periods of time, but they do not replace professional help by any means. But things like finding ways to seek gratitude and meaning in what is happening in your day-to-day. One of the things that practices that I find extremely helpful is starting the day and ending the day with a moment of gratitude. Even if it's the worst day ever, to be able to find something that you're grateful for. And it may be that I survived the day. That might be what it is. But it's those little things that really do help with a mindset shift and can be helpful. And I know they sound, you know, kind of far-fetched, but it really does work. Also prioritizing self-care. so many times we focus on being able to take care of others, being able to continue to do everything that needs to be done, and not focusing on our self-care. Self-care including getting enough sleep, making sure that we're eating well, making sure that we're not overindulging in creating bad coping mechanisms like excessive alcohol, substance misuse, etc. And then looking for ways also to set those realistic expectations and planning for stress, recognizing those situations, especially at the holidays, that cause those extra stresses. If you know that being with certain family members causes you extra stress, plan and think about your strategies going into that day or into those interactions ahead of time. It will help to set up better planning, better outcomes than going in and being blindsided or being very stressed because you're unsure how something's going to go. So between the prioritizing self-care, planning for those stressors, and setting expectations can be really helpful. And those can be used on a day-to-day basis in regular life, let alone the holidays. But at holidays, sometimes we just need to be able to back off those additional stressors and help people through those times. And Jeff has some great additional resources that I know he's going to share with you.
I was going to go to Jeff. Jeff, what have you got?
Yep. Thank you, Nikki. So I highly encourage your listeners to go to our website, which is ruralminds.org, and you will find a combination of a number of both new materials that we've developed as well as other materials that other trusted organizations have pulled together that we've now consolidated in an easy-to-use format in one place. Again, ruralminds.org. I also want to make sure that people are aware of the 988 number that was launched 2 years ago across the United States. So at any point, at any time, day or night, a person can call 988 or text the number, and they will be connected to a live trained mental health provider who will help them get through whatever challenge they're dealing with day or night. And the beauty of this is not only having a resource that you can tap into when you need it the most, but they will also help you find local resources in your area once the crisis has passed, but you know you need to continue on this journey with the help of someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeff, tell me about Rural Minds. You've mentioned how it got started and what was the impetus for beginning it. What do you do there? What does Rural Minds do?
Well, Rural Minds is really focused on the stigma, the silence, and the suffering surrounding mental illness in rural areas. When my nephew died, I reached out to a lot of other nonprofits that work in this space that I've had a long history with that I trust and admire greatly. But when I asked the question about what are you doing specifically for people like my family, for the 46 million people that live in rural areas of this country, the basic admission that I got from these groups is that there wasn't really a lot being done. And so my family knew, in memory of my nephew, we needed to do something. We really are focused at this point, and we're only 3 years old, so we're relatively new to this work, even though, sadly, we're growing very quickly because of the epidemic in rural America. I wish we weren't, but we are. The fact remains that storytelling is so powerful, and that's why, whether it's on a call like this one or when I speak at a public meeting, I always start with my family's story. I try to humanize what's happening and put a face on the struggle in rural America. Because our premise and our proposition is that if we can get people admitting they have an issue and talking about it and sharing it, even with one other person, they're much more likely to go and seek help. So we've been very fortunate to partner with a lot of other nonprofits and for-profit companies, both in healthcare and in the rurally based industries, whether it's farming, fishing, the forestry industry. where we are trying to take our message where we know people in rural America are going for trusted information that can be very, very confidential in this nature.
Okay. Ruralminds.org is the website. Nikki, do you have a website that people should go? I imagine you'll mention Rural Minds, but is there anything, any place that they can go on your end?
Rural Minds is the partner that we have worked with and really recommend that you go to that site. There are other resources available, but a lot of them are right available on Rural Minds, and it's easy to remember one website versus many other links.
Very true. So ruralminds.org. Nikki, Jeff, I wish you the best for the holidays, and thanks for joining us, and thanks for stopping by here for a few minutes, and best to you both.
Thank you very much.
You as well.
We appreciate it.